we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots. Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, I'm here with Julie Wallace, a wife, mother, and registered nurse working in the emergency room of a local Bucks County hospital. Julie's been with Reopen Bucks since the early days and brings a unique perspective to the group as someone who's worked on the front lines throughout the entire pandemic. So welcome, Julie. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Hey, Josh. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. I guess we should start off with probably that, you know, I mentioned you've been with Reopen Bucks since the beginning, always have a really good insight into what's going on with COVID. You're coming on to talk as yourself, Julie Wallace, and not necessarily on behalf of your hospital or your colleagues or anything like that.
That's correct.
Fair to say.
Yeah, these are all my own experiences.
So, I mean, right there, you nailed it. I'm just curious to hear. You're an emergency room nurse in a pandemic. What is that experience? What do you think about being a frontline hero?
Yeah, well, we'll start at the beginning, you know, and thinking about March 2020 and coming into the emergency room and, you know, watching what was happening in Italy and overseas and, you know, seeing all these like terrible images and not really having any idea what to expect or what was going on. We put up all this sheeting in the hospital, in the emergency room. You know, we had stocks of PPE and, you know, people were nervous. You know, I remember having a conversation with my husband that I wasn't sure if, you know, if things got really crazy, like, would I be able to continue to even work?
Because you're worried about like your own safety from the virus?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And, you know, should I look for a new job or, you know, and like, but we were, you know, just going to see what happened. And, as you know, time kind of went on and we were really expecting a big surge and we had ventilators ready and, all the stuff was ready. We were ready for the patients to start piling in with COVID and it was a ghost town. I have never seen anything like it. I walked into the hospital one day and we had zero patients in the ER, zero. Mm. I've never seen that in my life. I work the shifts that statistically are our busiest shifts, zero patients. And I was sent home early numerous times. We never really got this like surge of COVID patients. We had a few here and there, but, overall, it was Deadsville.
And so you think that emptiness in the hospitals, emergency rooms, whatever that was going on, that was due to like not only did COVID not hit and crush the way they were expecting, but people were staying away, I presume. So you wouldn't get people coming in for normal ER things. In fact, that's another question is, you know, under normal operations, when people are just going about their little lives, running their businesses and stuff, you have like injuries happen in human activity. But since everything was shut down, there's not as much business, not as much human activity going on. So you were just seeing less of all basically everything was down.
Yeah, everything. We weren't getting the folks that were vomiting. We weren't getting the folks getting injured. We had no chest pains, no strokes. It was crazy. It was really crazy.
Weird. I remember distinctly one of your, once you joined the group, which you joined pretty early on. So obviously we started the group like May of 2020. You were right there at the beginning. One of the first things you posted, and I don't think I knew at the time that you were a nurse or anything, but it was a share of Doylestown Health, a video of one of the emergency room doctors there kind of doing a walkthrough of, hey, if you need to come to the emergency room, here's what it's going to be like. This is the procedure, the process. And the whole point of it was him saying like, look, it's safe. It's okay. We're not overflowing with tons of COVID. In fact, the whole place was empty, just like how it sounds you're describing. So come on in if you need care. So it was really interesting how that flipped all of a sudden to like, you started to feel early on like maybe this was actually becoming problematic, that people had issues for which they should be seeking care, but decided to stay home because they're afraid of getting COVID in the hospital? I don't really know. But again, you're starting to see like okay, this could have ramifications on people's health because they're not getting care for other things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure it's multifactorial, of course, but yeah, I, you know, actually wrote an op-ed early on as well, kind of to that effect of we're ready in the healthcare system, you know, to take care of COVID patients. And, we need to not be shutting down businesses. We need to be really focusing, on our vulnerable populations and nursing homes and, you know, those that, you know, we really knew very early on that were going to be at risk for COVID, you know, the overweight, those with metabolic dysfunction, and diabetes and hypertension, and of course our elderly populations. That was really how I got plugged in more to Reopen Bucks was, I was really just like not experiencing the level of emergency that public health was telling us that we needed to see. And the idea of shutting down businesses and taking kids out of school, and all of these crazy things that we were doing were just, they were not correct.
Yeah. It's interesting. You bring up in particular the obesity factor and how that plays in. I mean, like shutting down gyms, how was that reflected in your experience in the hospital? Like, were the people coming in typically comorbid with other factors?
100%. Yeah. I mean, as time went on, we did see a few outliers, of course, and that happens with, you know, every disease state, there's going to be outliers, but the vast majority absolutely fit into those categories. And we knew that from very early on, you know, and I spent a lot of time looking into COVID and reading about COVID. I was super fascinated by it. And we knew these things really early on. And I personally was just not really scared of COVID. I'm 40. I'm a regular CrossFitter. My husband is a regular CrossFitter. Our kids are active. For our family, you know, we really didn't fall into any of those categories. So I didn't have a ton of concern for my own risk profile.
Did you eventually get COVID either via the hospital setting or anything else?
I did. Yeah. So I would say, you know, those first couple months from like March until maybe about October, November of 2020 were so slow, in the hospital. And like I said, I was getting sent home early almost every shift. I did end up, getting COVID in November of 2020 with that kind of first big spike that, we did end up seeing in the hospital. And my symptoms were mild. I had a kind of a weird stuffy nose. I continued to work out, I lost my sense of smell for a couple days, and that was kind of the extent of it. My family never got COVID.
Wow.
My kids, my husband, we did not change any of our routines, in a normal life. So, you know, my personal experience did reflect, you know, what the science was showing us about who is truly at risk.
Like, you were healthy and it was a cold for you.
Yes.
And I'm real curious that it didn't hit any of your family. That's always been something that's fascinated to me, is we've treated everybody kind of the same way in terms of how we mitigate and what we demand people do. But there's a real truth to the fact that, like, some people, for whatever reason, they're super spreaders. They could be a healthy person and be a super spreader, but then other people will never spread, and we don't know why.
Another thing that we learned super, super early on was that the super spreaders are absolutely a thing. I think particularly in the earlier strains, probably the one that I had. You know, I think I remember reading a study that, you know, even within households, it was like a 17% transmission rate. Which is so low, for most people. But then you have, you know, you have your couple people who are super spreaders, and we've found, you know, through the last 2 years that actually generally the super spreaders are the elderly and the obese populations. they're making higher, they have higher viral loads, they spread higher viral loads, and they're typically your super spreaders.
Hmm. What was, as you go along from March to, you described like October, November, when I presume that's like the surge is going to hit and things are going to get crazy in the hospitals, what were the requirements like for you on a, you know, just a regular shift, you're going in to treat a COVID patient. What does that look like for an emergency room nurse? Like, what do you have to do PPE-wise?
So, a fitted N95, that's a really important thing that nobody really talks about, is that we actually go through a whole fitting process, that, you know, we wear this big hood and they spray some sort of chemical into the hood. And if you can taste the, it kind of tastes like saccharin-ish, I would describe. If you can taste it, then your N95 is not fitted correctly.
So that sounds intense.
Yeah. So we do this, we do this every year. We've always done this, that, you know what size N95 you are. If you happen to get a TB patient, you know, or any of these other aerosolized viruses. So I have my, fitted N95 with a surgical mask on top and a face shield, a hair net or cap, and a gown and gloves.
All right. So it sounds like pretty much as you can do without putting on like a hazmat suit.
Basically, yeah.
You go in. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what happens then when October, November hits and suddenly it's crazy? Was that like just COVID, or was it that something turned on with everything else? We talked about earlier that emergency room volume was down. Does it kind of just come back with everything, or is it like just COVID?
It was a lot of COVID, but everything else was starting to come back, I think, at that point as well. It had been 6 months and people were starting to return to the office. People were getting, I think, a little more comfortable coming back to the healthcare system in general. So that surge, I would say, honestly, was like actually fairly typical, though, of a normal winter in the ER. Like, we've had, for my whole career, we've had weeks where the hospital is full. We're holding patients down in the ER. We're on divert from EMS. We've had weeks like that in the winter that are terrible. And so it felt to me kind of similar to that, just plus PPE.
So kind of a, yeah. At that point, is the PPE becoming like a pain in the ass to the nurses? I mean, I guess to you. Because, I mean, you mentioned you went from March to October, November before you got it. That's 6 months. That's a long time to be treating COVID patients and never get it. And you mentioned that you had the mindset of like, you know what, I just want to face it. Just bring on the virus. I'll get it. I'll get over it. And then I'll be good to go. So I'm sure that that becomes like a very cumbersome thing to have to do every single time.
Oh, yes. There was so much sweating.
So,
you have to do what you got to do, but I remember this. I was taking care of this one patient who was very sick with COVID, and I had to be in that room for 30 minutes. I was putting a Foley in, and it was an impressive amount of sweat.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So going along with that, I'm curious about something else that just has to do with the emergency room experience. What were visitor policies like, and how did that develop? And I bring that up because, we're kind of coming out of this phase here where this past winter you suddenly started to see a lot of policies at different hospital systems where if people came in with COVID, sometimes they couldn't even have, their spouse or something with them, which kind of makes no sense. So I'm curious what that was like for you.
Yeah. Again, this is just my own opinion, but the visitor policies are atrocious to me and have been from day one. We did not allow any visitors for anyone for months and months just to start. It's awful. It's awful. You have to allow a mother and a father to come in with their child. And it puts me at no extra risk to have family members from the same household in a room together. And this was for everyone. This was for everyone, not just COVID patients. over time, the policies did change to, you know, just COVID patients. As soon as anybody was diagnosed with COVID, immediately kick out their family member into the waiting room or to their car. And they were not allowed to have a visitor for their entire hospital stay if they got hospitalized. And people would just, you know, call the family members. And it's just, it's not the same. It's not the same right. as having somebody in the room advocating for you.
I was just going to ask. I mean, I can imagine in my head that that's going to decrease the quality of the care because there's not somebody there to just watch and keep an eye on the person, advocate for them, say, hey, can you get this person a cup of soup or change their towel or whatever it is. Like there's sure. tons of things that have to happen yeah. to a person.
Just ask for water, like right. or a blanket. Like that's fine. I have no I had personally no problem having family members in with patients. There were probably some exceptions if somebody had dementia. But for the most part, I mean, they got kicked right out and it's a sin.
What did you know about early on? I could be totally like making this up, but I want to say that early on, there were a lot of people who were in the very late stages of COVID, almost end stage of COVID, doing very poorly, like in the ICU, who were not allowed as they approached the point where they need to be put on a ventilator or something, not allowed to like see their family.
Absolutely.
So you essentially have people dying without being able to see their family.
Right. And they're getting FaceTimes. FaceTime is not an acceptable practice to me, if it was my loved one. And but I mean, policy was king and you could not break policy.
Yeah. And so that policy, as well as you mentioned all the PPE stuff you guys have had to do, all of this stuff is really, it actually goes back to like 2 weeks to slow the spread or whatever it is, 15 days. It's all, we didn't want to overwhelm the hospital system. That's like from day one been the goal. It's not necessarily that we're going to like stop. I think at some point, a lot of people did change their goal to be, hey, we're going to get rid of COVID from the world. Like it's not going to exist because we're going to beat it. But at the beginning stages, it was always like, let's make sure the hospitals won't be overwhelmed. So in your experience, you mentioned there was a surge that 2020 to 2021 winter. Obviously, there was a big surge this winter. From what I can tell, looking at the hospital data, which I do sometimes, they look identical. Like despite having vaccines now, the surge on the hospitals looks pretty much the same from a COVID perspective. So I'm curious, do you feel like the system was ever overwhelmed?
I mean, it's interesting that you say that. For my hospital system, I would say we were very, very close to being overwhelmed for probably like the last 5 to 6 months. Also, something I've really never seen is the from the past couple months. And I mean, we were holding so many patients in the ER every day. And
like they're patients that need to be admitted, but there's no room.
There's no rooms on the floor. Correct. So we're holding them down in the ER. So they're, you know, taking up beds in our ER. Our wait times, I mean, there was a day I was doing triage. I mean, it was like 8 to 10 hours wait wow. To get in. So
how do you handle
I would say that the last surge for us was far worse than the 2020.
How do you handle like an 8 to 10 hour wait time when someone comes in like with a broken arm or, you know, like, I mean, that's your job to triage.
Yeah. So they wait.
That's really rough. Now, how much of that, because I mentioned before, I'll look at the HHS data that they're putting out that's got to focus on COVID, but it also talks about bed availability and what people are in the hospital for other things. When I look at last winter versus this winter that just passed, they look the same to me. So if you're telling me it's way more slammed, I'm inclined to think, okay, we've just been through these vaccine mandates and kind of an exodus from the nursing profession, or like a lot of nurses are moving to Florida or whatever. Is it more that there's like staffing issues now?
We absolutely had staffing issues. Yes, major. I would say, I mean, we did lose a lot of nurses to travel nursing. The bonuses and the pay for travel nursing are just, I mean, through the roof. I get calls and texts and emails with travel nursing offers all the time. And I mean, the pay is exceptional. So we did lose a lot to travel nursing. We lost several others just to other hospital systems that were giving bonuses and paying more and having better hours. So we were absolutely dealing with staffing shortages. We used a lot of travel nurses in our ER.
And when did that, the staffing shortage, when did, was it like specifically the vaccine mandate that kicked that off, or was it before that? Like, how did that all happen?
That's a good question. I would say probably about maybe about 6 months in. I think when that first surge kind of hit and the opportunities started becoming available, I think a lot of nurses just quit the profession in general. They didn't, you know, they didn't want to deal with the pandemic anymore.
It's like you're going to have a lot of burnout. It's frontline of a pandemic. We're going to have a lot of burnout.
Yeah, there is so much burnout in healthcare, and no one's really talking about it, but it's pretty bad.
Well, at that point, so that's kind of towards the end of 2020, the vaccines were right around the corner at that point in terms of rolling out to be like publicly available. I think they first made them available to you guys, to healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. In that early phase when it starts hitting, like, first of all, I presume you mentioned you had just had COVID. So you're probably like, I'm good. I got natural immunity.
Oh, totally. I was good. That. Yeah.
So did you think in that early phase of probably like the first half of 2021 or whatever, that like this was going to become something that was going to be mandated in healthcare?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I am old enough to remember when Joe Biden said that the vaccine would never be mandated.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
Yep.
Sticking
Thanks
with that
promise. Thanks for that one. So there was a hot second that I thought that, you know, nah, we're not going to have to deal with this. But that ended up changing, of course. We all know that CMS mandate came down. And we actually, once the mandate, actually, this was before the mandate, we had started seeing some of the Bucks County and Philadelphia hospital systems starting to mandate on their own. And, you know, we're kind of watching this happen and wondering what's going to happen in our healthcare system, in our system. And a couple of friends and I actually put together a petition for our hospital system. And, you know, we kept it to just employees of our hospital system. We wanted, and, you know, anybody that was vaccinated, unvaccinated, whoever, to, you know, just tell the administration that, you know, we're really opposed to mandating this. You know, many, many, many of us already have natural immunity. It was very clear from all of the science that natural immunity was totally real, very durable.
And other countries were recognizing it, just like you could have access to everything vaccinated people do if you have natural immunity.
Right.
It was only here where that was like not recognized.
Right. Yeah. Which is crazy. I mean, this is the United States of America. Like, we're supposed to be the leaders. And
well, we're the headquarters for Pfizer too.
Well, so
that's the problem. Just my
yeah, I mean, I won't go there, but see where you're going with that.
So you put in this letter. I mean, eventually, I assume a mandate did happen. I think at this point,
yeah,
it's like
so,
every hospital.
Yeah. So this was August of 2021. I did go back and look. That we submitted the petition to our administrators. We heard nothing in reply, total crickets. We had offered to, you know, go and speak to them. I know for a fact there were at least a few physicians on our, you know, COVID response team who were also pushing for natural immunity as well. And that was, you know, that was like a big part of our petition. And plus the idea that that we're already short-staffed, like we can't afford to lose any more employees. So my hospital system actually just kind of ignored it really until the CMS mandate came down, and then we got the notification from our CEO that it would be mandated, and that, you know, opportunity would be forthcoming and direction about how to submit for an exemption.
So I assume at that point, most people who didn't want one, they're like similarly in your position, submit for a religious exemption.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I know a few that did just go out and get it just because they were going to have to. But for the most part, the people that I know, submitted for religious exemptions. We had a couple of us get together, one night and talk about, you know, what we were going to say and what the angle you know, should be. And, you know, one girl had actually talked to a lawyer, about, you know, submitting it, something that would be accepted.
And that, just the process of coming up with, you know, you're writing a religious exemption. That's a very personal experience, like putting your thoughts and beliefs down on a piece of paper that's going to be judged by somebody. What was that process like?
Yeah, so it was extensive. I mean, we had to answer a bunch of questions. I wrote out a whole full page of my thoughts and feelings. And, you know, it's really a good exercise in examining my faith. But it's really feels really dirty to have to send that to somebody that you know that does not share your beliefs, that is a total stranger, that doesn't know you. You don't know them. I'm like, I have friends.
Yeah, it's not
I have
like
good friends who don't know all of this stuff about me.
So where do you think it all goes from here? We are, for everyone's awareness, we're sitting here like finally springtime of 2022 and COVID cases are way down. For the most part, the world pretty much back to normal, but I imagine not for you, not at work. Like, it's still, hospitals feel to me like probably the very last bastion of where you'll still see COVID stuff like forever, like the mitigation stuff forever. So looking forward from here, where do you think we're going to go? Are you expecting that next fall, when inevitably COVID hits again and cases go up, you're just going to get the same slam of COVID patients and all the same policies and everything you've had to deal with will kind of become like a seasonal thing in your industry and in your job?
I would say probably. I don't have a lot of hope or faith that we're going to be getting rid of any of these policies anytime soon, especially once the hospitals get full. You know, that was the first thing that went, was like the visitor policy that we talked about, that all of a sudden, like, no visitors were allowed in outside of, you know, end of life hospice care. I can hardly even imagine them saying that we can take our masks off in a patient's room.
Maybe someday, hopefully.
Maybe someday.
So I'm curious then, that's the outlook kind of for the industry, but what about for you? We talked about earlier, like the burnout and, you know, the industry, your job has very fundamentally changed, in my opinion. I look at healthcare as being very fundamentally different from what it was in 2019. So where are you at? Like, are you good to hang and be an emergency room nurse for a long time?
I am good to hang. For now. Yeah. I would say, you know, the last couple of shifts I've done, have seemed to be a little more back to normal. I am hoping, we get back to a more solid position staffing wise. I like being an emergency room nurse. I also feel like it's really important that, we have nurses like myself in healthcare. I've heard some absolutely horrible things from some of my colleagues, you know, about unvaccinated patients, and it's ugly. And those patients need people like me in hospitals.
Yeah, that's a good place to end it, because I can't say thank you enough. I mean, truly the front line throughout the whole pandemic, and in particular, you have been someone who is like extremely team reality. I've always really appreciated that. So I myself, just from getting to know you, I feel like I've learned a lot, because there's a lot of people on both sides who kind of get into their tribe and just want to like run away with talking points or ideas or whatever. There's not a lot of people who are like, okay, what's in the data? What are the studies saying? And then what are we seeing, whether it's in the hospital or out in the community or whatever, and how do we make it all make sense? And I feel like you've always been someone to do that. So I'd agree. We need a lot more healthcare workers like you to stick it out. So thanks so much. Thanks for coming on and chatting with me. This has been great.
I appreciate you having me.
All right. Thanks. See you guys.